You want to live a life on fire and on mission. You want to be filled with such conviction and drive that you stop caring about what anyone thinks. You want to face each day alive, authentic, and fully present in every moment. With your wife, with your kids, on the street, at work. You want to bring yourself to the table and to stop bringing the watered-down, nice, what-everyone-wants version of you. You want that self to be a man who is burning in passion for Jesus, unafraid to bring his kingdom to anyone in your path, no matter what it costs you. You want to love the one in front of you without fear, without needing love back, and without reserve. You want to husband well. You want to father well. You want to shepherd your life well. You want to be a safe pillar for anybody around you. You want to experience God for real, to not just believe, but to know that he's got you and that he'll show up on your behalf, that he'll show up through you. You want to get to the end of your race and say, yep, I gave it everything. Jesus, you know I'm all in. And you want to know just how to get there. Welcome to Man Warrior King. I'm your host, Matt Halleck. Congratulations. You're among the violent taking the kingdom by force. You're among the chosen answering the call to rise above yourself. You're in the forge being stripped down and strengthened, and you will rise stronger, solid, unshakable. You are a man. You're a warrior. You are a king. I want to take a quick moment before we jump into the podcast episode for today to announce to you what I'm super excited about, which is the opening of the ranks of Adullam. If you're not familiar with what it is, it's going to be a 12-week group transformation initiative where we will together, you and me together, we will be going after the life change transformation that so many men have already been encouraged by, built up by, whatever you want to call it, through the DNA of a man. We are going to take the content of the DNA of a man and we are going to go deeper, farther, and wider with it. We are going to expand our borders as we develop kingdom manhood within us. This is going to be the most powerful 12 weeks of many men's lives. And I want it to be the most powerful 12 weeks of your life. I want it to be crucial in your transformation. I want it to be crucial in you rebuilding your marriage. I want it to be crucial in you finding your kingdom mission on the earth so that you can stop living small, stop living stuck, stop living apologetic. Over these 12 weeks, we're going to be having live meetings together, and you're going to be getting video recording trainings from me, and you're going to have fellowship and interaction with other men on the same path as you. This could really be a turning point in your life, and I want you to be a part of it. Until November 4th, we have early bird registration pricing. After that, the price is going to go up by $300. So this is really incredible value for the low price that you can get it up until November 4th. All right. If you want to look at more info about it and read up all about it, you can head to manwarriorking.com/Adullam. That's Adullam. And I'm also going to put the link in the show notes here. All right. So join me, join the other brothers, and we will see you soon. Here's the podcast episode for today. Tonight, the Lord reminded me of a life-changing sermon that I listened to. I don't often listen to a single sermon multiple times. This one, for whatever reason, I did. This life-changing sermon I listened to, like, it must have been seven times, which doesn't sound like a huge number, but for an hour something long sermon as a college student, that's a big deal. And I came across this sermon during a time in my life when a lot of crap hit the fan. And during my college years, I got engaged to my wife at the same time as my health starting to get under attack, at the same time of getting scammed out of $5,000, which is a lot of money for most guys, and especially as a college student, a lot of money. At the same time as having my family freak out and tell me they didn't want me to marry my wife, at the same time that I was running away from the Lord in the area of pornography. And the whole point of tonight is not pornography. This is not a secret, hey, let's get this thing settled. Though I imagine just numbers wise, that's an issue for some guys on the call here. But at that time, I had been praying. I had been asking the Lord about proposing. And he had told me, Matt, yeah, that's great. That's fine. But you can't propose. You can't build a marriage on a broken foundation. And you need to actually come clean with your wife. She needs to know, or your girlfriend, if you want to get married or engaged, she needs to know about this, that you've actually lied to her about. And because I had lied to her in different ways, to hide the fact that I'd been doing pornography for a couple of years. And when he told me that, I ran from him, I resisted him, and I didn't want to obey. I did not want to do what he said because I was too afraid of losing my girlfriend, fiance. I was too afraid of what she would think of me. And so I basically ignored that command of his for, I'm going to throw this out there. It might've been more, might've been less, probably around 8 months. I didn't do it. I didn't talk with her. I didn't come clean about where I had lied to her. And I eventually told her, but I told her in a way that was making it sound better than it actually was. So I lied in telling her about it, which was a stupid idea. If you're ever coming clean about something, you might as well just do it all at once. And it wasn't until after we were actually married when I told her the full truth completely. Not a good idea, not a good foundation to build our marriage on. And during this time, oh man, I felt such heavy conviction all the time. But the problem is that I was immature enough at that point to not be able to tell when conviction stopped and guilt and shame and condemnation began. And God was constantly speaking to me through sermon after sermon I'd listen to. I'd turn on the radio on my way to work, and whatever little 2-minute snippet or whatever on the radio station was speaking to me about this thing constantly. So he was present in his speaking and in his conviction. And at the same time, I had started agreeing with a lot of these voices from Satan, condemnation and shame. Things like, yeah, well, you know what? I'm never going to be in ministry because I'm never going to get past this thing. And I'm just not going to be able to do it because I'm too scared and too afraid. And I'm not going to come clean with my wife, but hopefully it'll work out anyway. But I'm going to have to come up with new life plans because I'm no longer fit for what I had thought I wanted to do with my life. All these weird things happening. So at this time, this sermon called 10 Shekels in a Shirt, I stumbled upon. And it's from, I don't know, earlier in the 1900s, middle of that century sometime, by a guy named Paris Reedhead. Strange name, but that's the guy it was by. And I want to show you the passage of scripture that sermon was about, because for the guys who are with us tonight, we have strong desires of all kinds. We have places where we desire healing, where we desire restoration, where we want to see God come through. And that is good. And that is fantastically okay. But in that place, it's very possible to accidentally sink in to some places of unhealth. And so as men of the kingdom who are after strength, life, vitality in the Lord, it's absolutely crucial. It's absolutely crucial that we maintain a fixed focus on Jesus. It's absolutely crucial that our eyes burn with passion primarily for him, so that compared to him, it looks like we hate everything else. That's what he said. So I'm going to show you this section of scripture here. And it's going to start by showing you my Facebook feed tab. So there's all your faces. Oh, and here's that tab. Ah, here we go. So in Judges, actually, chapter 17, there's this random story that most of us don't know. Most of us are not familiar with. Okay, this random story, Judges chapter 17, it says in this first paragraph here that there is this guy named Micah. And through some strange, like, interactions with this guy's mom, it looks like he had stolen her silver and she didn't know where it was. And then he came clean with her and said, yeah, I actually have it. And then she like makes a carved image out of it right here. She's dedicating the silver to the Lord. And then she makes a carved image. Very strange. I don't see how you can do both. Anyway, she does. And so it says his mother took 200 pieces of silver, gave it to the silversmith, made it a carved image and a metal image. And it was in Micah's house. Micah is this dude who stole from his mom, and she ended up giving him this carved image back from that silver. Okay. And then it says this: he had a shrine and he made an ephod and household gods and ordained one of his sons who became his priest. So this is an Israelite. This is a man whose identity is a man of God. His identity is a son of the Father. And here he is doing his own thing, making his own place of worship, making his own household gods, and creating his own priest, stepping outside of God's ordained plan to have the Levites be the priests. And at this time, the place where they were settled as Levites, the place where God's presence was in Shiloh, not where this gentleman is living. And it says here, in those days, there was no king. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Now, we know from other parts of scripture that the request for a king from Israel was not good. Samuel gets pissed at the Israelites because they asked for a king instead of being happy with the Lord. So this statement here might seem strange, but here's what I believe it means for us. Jesus needs to be king in our land, in our spirit, in our focus. And we're going to see more of what that means in a moment. But when there is no king ruling over us, when there is no king in our lives that we are submitting to, one of the books that I will write in the future is The DNA of a Warrior. And one of the aspects of a warrior that is absolutely vital is that the warrior lives submitted. A warrior in an army is not just doing his own thing. He is living submitted to his captain. And somehow, as we submit to Jesus, our captain, he elevates us and promotes us and honors us to the point where he wants to hear our thoughts, where he's willing to listen to our opinions, where he's actually willing to back and forth with us. But it doesn't change the fact that we live submitted to our king. And then it says, if we go on, it says there was a man of Bethlehem in Judah, of the family of Judah, who was a Levite. This man was meant to be one of the priests of God. And it says that he was traveling. He was sojourning there in the hill country of Ephraim. So he departed from the town of Bethlehem to sojourn wherever he could find a place. So it would appear that he wasn't satisfied with his place in the Lord, but instead he was out looking for something else. And as he journeyed, he came to this hill country of Ephraim, to the house of Micah. And Micah said, "Where do you come from?" And he said, "I'm a Levite, and I'm going to find a place where I could basically settle." And Micah jumps on the opportunity, and he says, "Oh, stay with me. You're a Levite. Perfect. That's exactly what I needed. So stay with me and be a father and a priest. And I'm going to give you, here's what I'm going to give you in return. I'm going to give you 10 shiny, beautiful pieces of silver and a suit of clothes, and you're living." So I want you to understand something. This Levite, whose inheritance was the presence of God, this Levite, who was privileged among all of the tribes, among all God's people, to be one of the ones who ministered in the presence of God with the Ark of the Covenant, this Levite gave up God so that he could get 10 pieces of silver and a new shirt. Because maybe it was the fame, or, I mean, it's not really all that much fame. It's one dude's house. Maybe it was just the place of immediate honor where, oh my goodness, I'm showing up and this guy loves me. This guy wants me. He's going to give me what I'm, you know, provide for my needs. He's going to give me 10 pieces of silver and a new shirt. Yeah, I'll give up the presence of God for that. And it says that he was content to dwell with the man, and the young man became to him like one of his sons. And Micah ordained the Levite, and the young man became his priest and was in the house of Micah. And Micah said, "Oh, good. Hooray. Now I know that the Lord will prosper me because I have a Levite as priest." Pretty much everybody in this story is wrong. And I want to make sure that for us on this call tonight, we are not falling into this same trap. So Micah, the guy who hires the Levite, he has no desire to know God. If he did, he could have gotten up off his butt and gone to Shiloh to seek after the Lord. You contrast that with Elisha, who sees the presence of God on Elijah so much that he gives up everything in order to have it. Elijah tells him over and over again, "Hey, stop following me. Stop following me. Stop following me." And Elisha says, "No way. I'm not stopping. I want a double portion of what you have." And remember, like we prayed at the beginning, that if anybody wants to please God, they must believe that he exists and that he's a rewarder of those who seek him. And Elisha sees that and he says, "That is reward for me. I will give up everything." Jesus says, "Go sell all you have and come follow me," to the rich young man. He even says, "Hey, don't even stop to bury your father or mother, whoever it was. Let the dead bury their dead. You come follow me." That's extreme. And so
here we have this man, Micah, who says he's not after God. He's hoping that God will come after him. He says, I'm not surrendering. I'm not submitting to my King, Jesus. Instead, I'm hoping to manipulate Jesus into submitting to me. And the Levite's all on board. He's like, hey, if I can use my identity, if I can use who God made me to be for my own gain to get 10 pieces of silver and a shiny new shirt, then I'm going to do that. And so if you go on and look at chapter 18, we see these guys from the tribe of Dan. There's five scouts from the tribe of Dan who are out looking around for whatever. And they find this Levite. And they say, hey, ask God for us whether the journey on which we are setting out will succeed or not. And the priest, this Levite, says to them, yes, go in peace. This, your journey is under the eye of the Lord. Basically meaning, yeah, you're going to find favor. This priest is in no way serving God. He's just tickling their ears with what they want to hear. They go, they get the rest of their men of their tribe, 600 men. And they come back and they say to this Levite, they say down here. So they come to Micah's house to basically take Micah's idols and all of this false god paraphernalia that he's set up. And the Levite sees them and he's like, hey, what are you guys doing? Stop. And they're like, keep quiet. Put your hand on your mouth and come with us. Be a father to us and a priest. Is it better for you to be the priest to the house of one man or the priest to a tribe and clan in Israel? And this Levite, this priest's heart was glad. He took the ephod and the household gods and the carved image, and he went along with them. So he was basically just looking for the highest bidder. He was looking for whatever he could find that might be making him get elevated in the earth. And I am not under any pretension or assumption that anybody on this call tonight is just simply looking to make a buck, figuratively, like these guys are. But what can happen, gentlemen, is that we tend to see how we can make God work for us. And sometimes we start praying for healing and restoration. For example, I know because of comments on the call tonight, healing and restoration in our marriage. Sometimes we can pray for those things, which are good things. I'm not saying that 10 pieces of silver and a new shirt are bad. Those are fine and good. But we can pray for those things and see, oh, crap, I've started praying and it's getting worse. I've started praying and God's not showing up. God's not doing anything. And we can't figure out why he's not working for us. And I would like to suggest that if you find yourself in a place where, quote unquote, God isn't working for you, it may be that he is being gracious towards you because he doesn't want this to happen to you. He doesn't want you to become somebody who is selling out your identity and your inheritance of his presence so that you can get a payout. I wonder remember the story of Hezekiah. It's in Chronicles. It's also in Isaiah. There's a time when Hezekiah is surrounded. He's the king of Judah. All right. And the city of Jerusalem is surrounded by the Assyrians and their king. And the king of Assyria sends messengers or whatever, or something like that. He sends messengers to start yelling threats and insults and start yelling, "Hey, people in Jerusalem, do you really think that your God is going to save you? Do you really think that your king Hezekiah is going to save you? Do you know what we've done? Do you know the devastation we've already caused, and you somehow think you're going to make it? No way." And Hezekiah hears about this, and he does something that probably wasn't very wise or responsible, but it was absolutely in line with the heart of God. Instead of mustering the troops, instead of redoubling the defenses, instead of setting, I don't know, twice as many guards on watch all night long, instead of sending word to Egypt for help, which the Old Testament is full of God saying, "Hey, do not go to Egypt. Don't look to Egypt for your help. I am your help. I am the one who helps you." Instead of doing any of those things that would have been wise, what Hezekiah does is he runs to the temple. See, instead of trying to get God to work for him on his terms, trying to find all the secret keys, all of the things. We can do that in the Christian world. We can look for the secret keys. We can look for the new declaration that I got to speak out right, and then it's going to magically do the formula that's going to make me heal. We can look for all of these secret keys that we think are going to work for us. And instead of doing any of that, Hezekiah runs to the temple and he asks Isaiah, "What does the Lord say about this?" And then Isaiah gives him an answer. And guess what? The answer doesn't pan out. Isaiah says, this is what the Lord says, that you're going to come out of this unharmed. Basically, not even an arrow is going to fly over the city walls. Sennacherib, the bad guy king, is going to go away. Your problem is going to be taken care of. So however soon it was, the next day maybe, I don't remember exactly, none of that has happened. And the bad guy king sends a letter detailing all of the crap he's going to do to the people in Jerusalem. And it strikes fear into them. And again, Hezekiah didn't say, "Well, you know what? I went to seek the Lord and he didn't show up. So now I better go to Egypt. Now I better take matters into my own hands because I got to do something to make God work for me." Instead of doing any of that, what he does is he takes the letter that the enemy sent and he takes that into the temple and he unrolls it. He spreads it out before God and he says, "God, do you see this?" In the places where we need God to show himself, what if we don't have to choose one or the other? What if we don't have to either say, well, lie to ourselves and say, "You know what? I don't actually care about the problems that I'm facing." And we can just live in denial and say, "It's all about your presence, God. I don't care about those things." We don't have to choose that. And we don't have to then be obsessed with those things and completely abandon the presence of God to try to use him for our own gain? What if, like Hezekiah, we can enter into his presence? Instead of running anywhere else, we run to his presence and we're honest with him and we say, God, you said one thing, but here is the evidence that what you said isn't happening. I'm putting all my eggs in your basket, God. I need you. Will you show up? But you know what? Even if you don't, I'm not leaving your presence. And we'll fight it out one day when I get to heaven. We have, when we are on a journey like what this Man Warrior King movement is about, a journey of transformation where we are looking to get from point A to point B, all right? And in point A, certain things in our lives are broken and they have brought us to a point where we've realized, holy crap, something I've been doing, some way I've been being hasn't been working. Yeah, life is hard and crap just happens, but there's an element where I have been contributing and I'm ready to be done. So we are in this journey of transformation, but when we're on that journey, if we are going about it constantly obsessing about the results, we're going to get disillusioned. If we're treating this journey of transformation, if we're treating the Holy Spirit, because that's really what we're talking about here, we're not alone. We're talking about connecting with the Spirit to the point where we become like him truly. If we're treating him like a formula, like a vending machine, we put in a coin, we get out a Twix, we're going to be disappointed because he will not be reduced to that and he will not let us carry on in that lifestyle. So when we become so obsessed with results and we say, oh my gosh, I've been praying for a week and nothing's happened, then I'm sorry, it's time that we get strong and man up and pray for another week. And it's time that we be willing to pray as the weeks keep piling on more and more and more until 40 years later, like Caleb, we finally enter the promised land and get to take the land that was promised to us 40 years before. There is room for our grit and our endurance and to stop looking for the immediate payout of those 10 shiny pieces of silver and a shirt when God is saying, but my presence is so much more. And I'm telling you, that as we walk in his presence, and we learn, we begin to get transformed, and we become, I full on believe that we can become unshakable. As we become that, like Hebrews says, everything that can be shaken will be. But there is a kingdom that cannot be shaken. And I promise you guys, your inheritance, what the Lord has for you, is for that kingdom to take root in you so much that you cannot be shaken. And when that happens and it spreads out from you, then anything in your world that is not of that kingdom can be shaken and crumbled, but the things that are will stand. And I'm telling you, that if you commit to the process, if you commit to the transformation, if you commit to the presence of God simply for the presence's sake, not for the results you get, I guarantee you, you will see results. The promises of God say so. So, I want to encourage you. I am the first person, as the guys who've been on the call before know, I am the first person to say, oh, it's a promise, then that's what we better believe for. I am not preaching a message of let go of what you're hoping God will do. I believe for some stupidly ridiculous things. Some of them have happened, others I'm still waiting on. But in that process of holding on tightly to the promises of God, I need to, at the same time, be holding them loosely. And I'm sorry that that is contradictory, but that's the way it is. I need to be willing to say, but even if this promise doesn't pan out, I am not wavering and I am continuing in the Lord. And I promise you also, as we continue this way, we will get to know him more than we do now, to the point where he and his person are enough to keep us hanging on when it seems like the circumstances aren't matching up. There is a place in God, a place in the kingdom that we can know him so well that we have no choice but to follow him even when our world is crumbling. I've told him many times. I've told him a lot of times, Jesus, I don't really like you right now, but I don't know where else to go. So I'm stuck with you and you're stuck with me. What are we going to do about it? It's like Peter who said, Lord, where else are we going to go? You're the one who has the words of life. And for some of us, that place is the beginning of the healing we're desperately searching for as we go wandering about the hillside, looking for some place where we can settle, where somebody will pay us 10 shekels and a shirt. It may be that our healing begins in this place where we can say, okay, Jesus, now I know you. And if we get strong in that, then come what may, naysayers, people close to us who backbite us and criticize us and tear us down, to heck with that. It doesn't matter because I know the Lord. I hear his voice. And that's the thing that I live my life according to. See you guys. When John was in prison, John the Baptist, and he sends his followers to Jesus to ask, hey, are you the Messiah or should we wait for somebody else? Jesus answers him. This is in Matthew 11, by the way, in case you're ever curious. Jesus answers him and he says, the blind see, the sick are healed, the poor have the gospel preached to them. Blessed are you if you're not offended because of me. See, John, I gotta imagine, I could be making this up, but I wonder if he's thrown in prison. He's been spending his entire life preaching about the coming of the Messiah. And when the climax comes, John has the rug pulled out from under him. He's thrown in prison, where he's eventually killed. Talk about the temptation to be like, but Jesus, I was doing all the right things and nothing. And then I was thrown in prison. I gotta wonder if he was battling a little bit of defeat and discouragement, disillusionment. And Jesus says, listen, I am the Messiah, because no matter what you see in front of you right now, the promises are still true. I'm still healing the sick. I'm still mending the things that are broken. And if you can continue and not be offended, then you're going to be blessed. And then he goes on to say, the kingdom of heaven suffers violence, and the violent men take it by force. I want to encourage you, gentlemen, do not sell out. Do not give up. Fight. Sometimes we just need to hear that. We need to hear fight. Because here's the thing. Is that if you can continue this journey of transformation, your inheritance is God himself, which is not stupid. It's not just some mythical, like, intangible doctrine. Your inheritance is heaven living inside of you and through you and coming out through you. Your inheritance is a life of miracles. Your inheritance is a life of hearing his voice. Your inheritance is a life of changing the world and leaving his mark where you go. And sometimes we get lost in the weeds because we are in so much very real and legitimate pain, struggle, challenge, whatever you want to call it. And we've gotten stuck trying to make God work for us. Instead of saying, God, I want you, and I'm not at a place where I'm willing to give up on these other things that I have wanted. I think they're good things, but I am willing to say, God, I don't want to use you for that end. I want you to be the end and not the means. See, for me, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on specifically marriage right now, but for me, so much of my prayers hit the ceiling and bounced back about my marriage, because I was desperately looking for God to change my marriage and my wife so that I could finally start surviving again. Felt like I wasn't even surviving on the inside. And I was asking him to work for me. And I'm convinced that for me, and probably for many guys in the same situation, I'm convinced that God is not eager to answer prayers that we're sending up in that way, because they're coming from desperation and we don't feel like we can survive unless that thing gets answered, unless the marriage gets changed. See, my prayers started carrying weight and authority when I could almost detach myself because I was healthy and whole on my own. So I could pray for the sake of my wife. I could pray for the sake of the marriage, but not so that I could have a better day. So I got to the place of a new kind of praying when I got strong on my own. I was after the Lord for himself. Basically to the point where I could be in a wilderness and still be able to thrive. That's when our prayers become powerful, become mighty. Because we're not praying from fear and desperation, we're praying from faith. And it's quite possible, because in the place of wilderness, that presence of God will meet you with the water that's going to sustain you. One of my favorite verses is Jeremiah, I believe chapter 2, where it says that my people have committed two evils. You guys, two evils. The first one is that they have abandoned me, the fountain of living water, the never-ending supply of life, because they thought that they were going to find all the answers and everything else. And they started worshiping all these other things. They started wandering away from their identity. And they made for themselves something lesser. They made cisterns. That's not an endless supply of water. It only catches water whenever it happens to come. But not only were they cisterns, he says, my people made broken cisterns that can't even hold water. So I want to ask you gentlemen tonight, what cisterns have you been making? Where have you been putting your well-being outside of the Lord? If you haven't, fantastic. There's no need to force yourself to find anything. I hate it when people start to feel guilty because they feel like, well, that's not me. That's fine. If that's not you, that's fine. But if it is you, Holy Spirit, please tell them. And let's keep things in their healthy position. Remember, in those days there was no king, and the people was right in their own eyes. We've got to have our king. This is Matt Halleck signing off and thanking you again for being a part of the Man Warrior King community. If you want more, head over to manwarriorking.com. And please remember to take just a couple seconds to subscribe on iTunes and to leave a 5-star rating and a review so that more and more men can join us as we become awesome. You are a kingdom man. Go out, take more ground, push back darkness. Remember, you bring value into your home, your work, and your circle. You are not a taker, you are a giver. Abundance is your atmosphere.